Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's go in depth on all things Hawkeyes. This is Hawk Central. On Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO.
Happy Wednesday, Hawkeye fans, and welcome into the latest edition of the Hawk Central Radio Hour on air tonight from 6 to 7 o'clock on Des Moines Sports Station 106.3 KXNO. My name is Chad Lystico of the Des Moines Register, and we are coming to you from Cleveland, Ohio, where the Iowa women's basketball team has made it to the final weekend of a long season. The Hawkeyes are 33-4 after one of the most satisfying and enjoyable wins in Iowa athletics history, a 94-87 triumph over defending national champion LSU on Monday night over in Albany, New York. Up next, Friday's 8:30 p.m. Central Time Final Four matchup against vaunted UConn, a matchup with two Midwest stars and a lot of intrigue. We will get into that matchup as this show goes on. But Dargan Southard, my Hawks Central and Register teammate on the women's beat, he was there with me in Albany, and we continue to take you every step of the way with this fun, enjoyable, tremendous, breathtaking team with an unbelievable superstar. So much to unpack, Dargan. And we did a lot in our 40-minute post-game pod that you all can catch at hawkcentral.com. You can check our social feeds if you missed that. But now, having a few days to kind of reflect on everything we covered in Albany, what comes to mind for you?
Yeah, you know, I think probably, you know, I know you've written about this, is just how well the game plan was executed pretty much across the board from Iowa. You know, it was established early that, you know, this team could run and could make a difference doing that. You know, I thought the scouting leading up to that game was obviously very significant and very thick and robust, even going back months for Raina Harmon. And, you know, it pretty much worked out across the board exactly the way that Iowa needed to. You know, they definitely ran LSU. They got them out of sorts on that front. Contrary to what some people think, that's exactly what Iowa does, and that's exactly what they wanted to do.
Yeah, there were some strange tweets out there.
Like, yes,
there was. Why is Iowa playing into LSU's favor?
Yeah, I mean,
tell me you don't cover women's basketball by not saying you don't cover women's
right.
basketball.
I mean, not only was that the most effective way to beat this LSU team, but it's the most effective way for this Iowa team to do what it does. And so there was just so many times where it felt like LSU was stringing together some buckets and going on a big run, and then Iowa would just either, you know, I remember at least four or five times where they would have just like a wide open layup that they themselves manufactured just by being better conditioned, being in better shape, knowing exactly what they needed to do. And to the point where, you know, I thought one of the noteworthy things that Raina Harmon said in the video that you did was, even if they scored, we knew we had to answer right back with speed and with, you know, transition buckets the way that they did. And so, you know, a lot of times when the game plan is that rigid and that, you know, clear, you can sometimes deviate from that over the course of 40 minutes. And Iowa never did that. They pretty much did everything that they needed to and looked like the team that was better prepared, you know, for this matchup.
Yeah, and a couple layers on that. It was kind of funny when I rewatched the game. So we're kind of giving this a little DVR Monday treatment. I mean, it was a Monday game, right? So
that's true.
You know, even like late in the game, like Iowa was like uncorking quick shots, like up 11 and up 13, and actually Bluter was starting to get upset about that. And she said during the third quarter interview with Holly Rowe, like, yeah, we got to like do some clock management here. So it goes to show you they were like following the game plan, like they were just gunning it. And that did allow LSU to kind of creep back. But then every time it seemed like Caitlin Clark had like the dagger, you know, mm-hmm. They get you know, maybe even three twos in a row or something. And then, you know, Caitlin steps back and hits a challenged three-pointer from like 30 feet. It was crazy. Like they, on the broadcast, when I rewatched it, they showed like the distance that she was shooting from. There was a succession point, I believe it was in the third quarter. Yeah, because it was going right to left, where it went like 27 feet, 28 feet, 30 feet, like back to back to back. And that was one of like the narratives after the game is like, why didn't Kim Mulkey, you know, change up the defense on Caitlin Clark? And people are like going all over this thing. And like when I rewatched the game, like, I mean, Haley Van Lith was doing all she could. Like she was actually in Caitlin's face on a lot of these things. And she just stepped back and hit it. I mean, it's like, why aren't you putting this on, you know? And then Flauje Johnson, there, she would have just gotten fouled out if she was on Caitlin. So, like, what do you do? I mean, that's the thing. It's like, they should have done something better on Clark. Well, like, nobody's figured it out for 2 years.
And listening to Kim Mulkey's tone after the game, you know, with the, as successful as she's been and as long as she's been doing it, I can't imagine there's many moments where she just kind of has to tip her cap and be like, you got me. And that was 100% what her tone was after the game, both her describing what she told Caitlin in the handshake line and just kind of, you know, there was, I mean, I'm sure she was upset that the game didn't go her way, but there was almost like a peace with her that she knew she had done everything that she possibly could to try to stop Caitlin Clark, and you know, none of it worked. Like, none of it even came close to working. And so it's funny that you rattle off those distances, and, you know, with so many players, it'd be like eye-popping each time. But again, there's been so much that Caitlin has normalized that is just, you have to pause and realize that this isn't normal and people aren't doing this on the regular. And so, you know, a lot of those threes felt very demoralizing and very deflating for LSU. You know, obviously the clip of Haley Van Lith kind of throwing her hands up has circulated a lot on social media, where Caitlin fires one over her head and she's just kind of like, yeah, I don't really know what else to do here. And there was a lot of those threes where, you know, Haley Van Lith was right on Caitlin and she just shook her, you know, and kind of created the space herself. And I think that probably comes into play with a lot of the, hey, you know, you got us on this night, because, you know, I think the defense to start each possession where Caitlin had the ball was decent and was intent on making it as difficult for her as possible. But as we've seen time and time again, she's able to not just handle what she's expected to handle, but make more of it and make, you know, even with the expectations being as high as they are for her, she somehow finds a way to go above and beyond them time and time again. And that's certainly what you saw all throughout Monday night.
Yeah. And, you know, we'll get into the UConn matchup in our second two segments, probably the second half of the show more specifically. But there's all, you know, on the heels of that, there's a lot of talk of how will UConn defend, you know, Caitlin Clark. They go only seven deep. And it's the type of thing where, like, it's a fun storyline to talk about and everything, but like, Caitlin has seen every possible defense she could possibly see. Mm-hmm. And what was cool about the LSU game was you could just see her adjusting to whatever the circumstances warranted. Like, when Angel Reese was kind of, she got the ankle injury and the two fouls. So mm-hmm. she was in and out a little bit in that second quarter. And that's when you saw Caitlin drive to the hoop and get a couple of those twos. And she, you know, she would drive into the lane and then maybe dish, mm-hmm. you know, to Hannah Stolke. There was an and one late in the game that really sealed the deal. There was another one after LSU had gone up 34-26. That was its biggest lead. And Caitlin drives into the paint. You think, oh, she's going to try to take over. No, she kicks it out to Sydney Folter for a right corner three, who hits a huge bucket at that point in the game that kind of stopped the bleeding, as we mentioned on a previous pod. And it just seemed like whatever the moment called for, she adjusted to it like live and in games. So you can't, as Sydney Folter has kind of told us a few times during this tournament, it's like, you can scout us, but we don't even know what we're going to do exactly next. And I think that's what's so impressive about Caitlin Clark and this team, but also what people on the outside don't understand about this Iowa women's team, because they adjust because of how fast they play, because of how long they've played together, because of their system. It's a motion, read and react type of offense. You can't come in with a scouting report against Iowa and expect it to work.
And you think about where Caitlin Clark was after last year's LSU game, where she was in the sport, where her stature was. And it would have been easy to look at that and see, okay, how can you cram any more greatness and any more improvements into this profile? And that's what I think is one of the most impressive things about Caitlin Clark, is as much and as quick as she's gotten to the top, she wants to stay at the top. And it does require adjustments, and it does require, you know, some self-reflection on how to make that happen. And I think that's been one of the biggest improvements with her this year and, you know, toward the end of last year, is, you know, how many times have we seen her kind of just get trigger happy and start pulling, you know, especially if the game is going a little sideways and whatnot. And I think her ability to stay disciplined within the game flow, within what's unfolding in front of her, is really why you've seen Iowa not just become one of the sport's greats, but has totally changed the mindset and the expectations and the confidence level that this team operates now. And obviously that's Caitlin driving the ship on that front.
12.6 million viewers on ESPN.
Crazy.
The most watched college basketball game, men's or women's, ever on ESPN. Obviously the most watched women's basketball game ever, topping last year's 9.9 million for Iowa LSU. So same matchup. I'm kind of curious to see, Dargan, what the, you know, what the ratings will hold now, because that it's Iowa UConn. But it's just an indication that, you know, when people talk about Caitlin Clark's legacy, like, TV ratings are like fun to talk about, and mm-hmm. they're like, wow, eye popping. But that is part of the whole conversation about, you know, people wondering if she's the greatest of all time or whatever. I mean, I think there's no doubt that she is, for me, just because of the spotlight, mm-hmm. the pressure, the ratings you're seeing, the explosion in women's basketball. It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like Tiger Woods in a way, like where one person kind of just drew eyeballs to the sport, and then it just surged for years to come. So, what do you think about? We talked a little bit about this on the car ride over to our hotel here in Cleveland, so I want to give you the floor on this. But what do you make about the Caitlin Clark legacy conversation, and like those that say, "Well, she's got to win a championship to be the GOAT of all time"?
Yeah, there's a couple of angles on this. I guess we can start first with the narrative that's developed that Iowa needs to win a title, which, if you followed Iowa women's basketball and you know where its stature, where its spot in the sports landscape was before Caitlin Clark arrived, that's just an incredibly silly statement. I mean, this team was in the WNIT less than a decade ago, and that's not a shot at anyone, but that just shows where this program was operating from at various recent points. And even when Megan Gustafson was here, and they got to the Elite Eight and, you know, took a pretty big L to Baylor, that felt like in that moment, okay, this might be the ceiling of the program here. So for people, you know, I think that in of itself is as big a sign as any of where Caitlin's impact has gone, to the fact that people feel like saying that Iowa women's basketball needs a national title and feel like they don't just sound completely crazy, even though I and many people believe that they do. That just shows how much things have changed. And it has been a team-wide thing, but it really took Caitlin Clark showing up and injecting a level of confidence into everyone that really hadn't been seen with this program at any point, not to this level at least. And so, and then another thing that's getting a little old is people who feel like when you say Caitlin Clark is the greatest of all time and Caitlin Clark is doing things that no one else has done right now, that's somehow a diss to all the other women's basketball players who came before Caitlin Clark. And so, you know, nobody's saying that if you call Caitlin the greatest that you're sliding or, you know, throwing strays at any of the other, you know, legends that came before her. And there were certainly many. I mean, the UConn dynasty and the Tennessee dynasty and several others, those don't happen without one great player after another. But, you know, whether it's the TV numbers, whether it's just the prices on the tickets, there's so many elements and there's so many different pieces of evidence that show that what she is doing is completely unprecedented, not to mention all the stats that indicate that as well. And so I do agree, like, when you factor in the greatest of all time argument, the scrutiny and the spotlight that she herself has operated under is unlike any that anyone in the women's game has ever had to deal with. And, you know, like when UConn and Tennessee were doing their thing, you know, there was no, you know, certainly social media was nowhere near what it is now, where anybody and everybody can chime in and offer their 2 cents on anybody. And as we know, you know, these, as much as social media seems like something that is easy to avoid if you're in these moments, I mean, these are 18 to 22 year old kids who live on social media and do all that. And so, when you factor in that element, when you factor in the scrutiny
and
the spotlight that she's been under,
takes it to another level.
And the fact that she has somehow managed, all this is happening without her doing or saying anything controversial at all, which is an accomplishment in and of itself in 2024.
Yeah.
I think all that has to be factored in. And that is yet another example of things that she's dealing with and doing that no one else in the sport has ever had to do.
Yeah, I was a couple things on that. Like on the plane, I found a video on my phone from last year at the Elite Eight after Iowa clinched the Final Four berth, and I might tweet it out, I might not, I don't know. But like, it was you in one side of the video and me on the other, and that was it.
Yeah.
That was the whole media scrum. Like in Seattle, like, and she's just like, you know, smiling, relieved, kind of leaning back, you know, just like, it's just amazing how much her world has changed in this last year and all the pressure that she has faced. I mean, when you just look at all the cameras that are around her, the demands that she has. I mean, she's, as we record this, it's right before she's probably going to win the Naismith, you know. At this point, winning a National Player of the Year award is just kind of a distraction on this whole.
It really is.
I'm not even joking. Like, it's, you know, there's like 2 days of the game, and she's got to go to Cleveland Browns Stadium to accept the Naismith, you know? So it's cool. It's cool, but it's so demanding, and that's what makes it that she rises to the occasion. She just hit 9 3-pointers at Dargan in the Elite Eight, 41 points, 12 assists for the second straight year in the Elite Eight to take Iowa to the Final Four. And this was the other point you didn't mention here, is like, people talk about Brady and Mahomes and all that stuff. They play in a salary cap league where the rosters are meant to be balanced. Like, there is no balance in women's, especially women's basketball. It's getting better, but still, UConn gets the best players.
Right.
You know, LSU assembled a super team. I mean, that's a fact.
I
mean, yeah. Iowa has one superstar, and who's the second best recruit on the Iowa roster? Probably.
Good question.
I mean,
I'm not sure. Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody
like a really. Folter?
Yeah,
Stolke?
I mean, maybe Stolke. I don't know. I don't really remember.
That's not a diss on anyone. I'm just saying, like,
I mean,
what
that
she's
just puts
done.
It further in perspective, how crazy this is. And one thing I think that you have to emphasize with Caitlin, and this is the case with any person who reaches the stature that she has in her sport, is she obviously makes everybody around her so much better. And that's such a key for Iowa to have success, and for the success that it's had, is, you know, not only do you have Caitlin hitting her crazy shots and doing what she needs to do, but there's a reason that so many of her teammates are wide open on threes and get wide open looks and get easy layups and get runouts that are uncontested. And that's because, you know, that's been part of her maturation process. Is somebody with that alpha mindset, I'm sure, took a while before she could fully embrace and trust that I can't do this by myself. And even if you know that, to go out and execute it and to make it happen at the level that Iowa and she has is a whole nother challenge. And that's really been as big of a key as anything. And you'll hear that when you hear scouting reports on how do you stop Iowa and all that.
Right.
It's like, well, Clark's going to get hers, but you got to stop everybody else around her. And Caitlin is a big facilitator in making all that happen.
Exactly. You're listening to Hawks Central from the Des Moines Register in KXNO. I'm Chad Lystico talking Iowa women's basketball with Dargan Southard. Thanks for joining us tonight. Speaking of legacies, Dargan, Iowa is now 15-1 in the postseason over the last 2 years. incredible to think about. I mean, considering that's high level competition you're facing there, I mean, including South, two defending national champs in there, two Big Ten tournament runs, some tough round of 32 games, a couple Sweet 16 games in there. It's pretty crazy. But our buddy Tyler Tashman did a story on Lisa Bluter. What a legacy moment for her too. She gets kind of overshadowed a little bit in the Caitlin Clark convo. But we were talking about this a little bit off air too. Like, what a story it is for her. I mean, been in Iowa her whole life as a coach, 39th year as a head coach, and you know, her first two Final Fours are in years 38 and 39. And yeah, Caitlin Clark is a big part of that, but it is she deserves a ton of credit. So does Jan Jensen, Abby Stamp, Raina Harmon, everybody on that staff. Jenny Fitzgerald for sure, you know, has been with her a long time as well. But just what do you make of kind of like how she has gotten this team to this level and what it means for her too, what it means for her legacy? She just beat Kim Mulkey, a four-time NCAA champion, to go to the Final Four.
Yeah, a couple of things here. I think, you know, Lisa Bluter's consistency and her longevity in the program gets kind of overlooked a little bit because it's been so established. But I mean, she didn't reach her first Sweet 16 until 2014-15 after starting in 2001 at Iowa. So that's, I mean, you think about how, about how rare that is in today's coaching landscape to get 15 years to not, you know, with no Sweet 16 appearances. Now, Iowa was consistently in the tournament.
Paging Iowa men's basketball.
Right. And I mean, just use that as a small comparison to how rare that is. And so for Iowa to have the patience and to have, you know, the belief that this was still the right person for the job, even though, you know, she was going to the tournament every year, but it wasn't like, I mean, I think before that Sweet 16 and 14-15, I think they had been maybe a four seed one time, and that was it. It was a lot of 6, 7, 8 seeds in there where, you know, you're kind of restricted as far as how long of a tournament run you can go. So the fact that she got the time that she needed, and when she got a situation like the one that she has with Caitlin, she didn't miss it and knew that this was different and this had to be something that had to be taken advantage of fully. And the other thing is, again, it's become second nature when you talk about Caitlin Clark and her impact on this program and the way that her and Lisa Bluter have meshed so well. But I think it bears repeating, not every coaching staff in the country would have accepted the Caitlin Clark experience the way that Lisa Bluter has. And I think that's a large reason why it's grown as crazy as it has and has become this massive, you know, nationwide thing. Is if Caitlin Clark was in a different program with a different offensive system and a different coach who, you know, wasn't okay with her launching 30-foot shots time and time again. Not that Lisa Bluter's happy every time she does that, but there's the trust was there and the belief was there, and the, you know, she handed over the keys to Caitlin Clark as a freshman, which is not something that's easy to do. And her belief and patience and trust, all that has been rewarded, maybe even more than she thought it would be, because she's allowed Caitlin Clark to be Caitlin Clark. And as much as that seems like, well, yeah, she's great, why wouldn't you let her do what she does? I think it needs to be noted that not every coach would have accepted that and accepted that as how you do things. And, you know, if Caitlin Clark goes a different direction with her college decision, you know, maybe it doesn't get as big as it does. You know, I think that's fair to say that a large reason why this thing has grown so big is because it's happening at Iowa and it's happening the way that it is.
Yeah, and there are several Coach of the Year, National Coach of the Year awards being handed out this week. Probably going to go to Dawn Staley, I would guess. But Lisa Bluter, I think, you know, you could make a case for, especially not bringing anyone in the portal. Now, you could say, well, that's a coaching mistake, but she and Jan Jensen, everyone else, catered this team to this, its strengths, and you saw that play out in the LSU game. So, I mean, honestly, like, there's no more perfect example of how, you know, She essentially outcoached Kim Mulkey.
Yeah.
I mean, 100%. To get to the Final Four. So up next, Gino Auriemma. We will dive into the Iowa-UConn matchup next here on Hawk Central 106.3 KXNO. Welcome back to Hawk Central Radio here on 106.3 KXNO. I'm your host, Chad Lystico, Hawkeyes columnist for the Des Moines Register. All the way on the show today with Dargan Southard, also of the Register, talking women's basketball. But did want to give a couple little men's basketball shout-outs to Tyler Tashman, who broke the news Tuesday that Peyton Sanford is entering the NBA draft, will retain college eligibility. Makes sense. I mean, he's going to be evaluated. He could be a second-round pick. He could be undrafted. He's going to get feedback either way. I think it's probably more likely than not he returns, but you don't know that. You're going into the process. Who knows what's, it's a little bit of a rebuild for Iowa men's basketball too, but it's also exciting because he can play with his brother. Also of note, let me see if I can find this here. Tony Perkins has announced his final six schools. This is Joe Tipton. If Tyler retweeted it. Missouri, Arkansas, Indiana, Oregon, Oklahoma, and Ole Miss. So Tony Perkins will have a new home. I know Patrick McCaffrey also in the portal, looking at some power conference schools. So we'll see what happens with him. So some roster movement there for the Hawkeye men. But let's go back to the women. Dargan here with me in Cleveland as we await Friday's Final Four matchup against UConn. 8:30 p.m. Friday night on ESPN. This is a monstrous program. Has been in 15 of the last 16 Final Fours. Lisa Bluter may have to, Dargan, to win a national title, go through Kim Mulkey, then Gino Auriemma, then Dawn Staley to win it all. So it's a daunting path. This is a different UConn team. We'll get into a little bit of the nuts and bolts as we go here. But first of all, Iowa 33-4, most wins in school history. I believe it's the fourth most in Big Ten history. Third most, actually. They were tied coming into that game. The third most wins for any team in Big Ten history. Like, is anything from here on out gravy, you feel like, for this team, this fan base? Or is it like they're not done yet? I know you kind of wrote a little bit about that coming into this week. And it hasn't published yet, by the way, as we talk.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting story.
Should be up soon. It really is interesting because, once the LSU matchup was set, you could kind of see, okay, Iowa's path to getting back to the title game was going to be kind of a murderer's row of the big players in the sport right now. And obviously Iowa is one of them. But to have to go LSU, UConn, and South Carolina in all likelihood if Iowa does get to the title game, I mean, that's really as big of a test as you could probably find in any tournament run. And so, you hear so many times after a big win, when there's still games remaining, a team will say, oh, we're not done yet, or, oh, we got more in the tank. And a lot of times those words are a little hollow in that, they're kind of just saying it to say it. But the vibe after the game, at least from my perspective, was very much emphasizing that without it seeming, with it seeming very genuine that, this team, it expected to be here. It expected to be going back to the Final Four. Once the LSU matchup was set, it was expected, they expected to beat LSU. But I do think that this team doesn't believe that it's finished and doesn't believe that, is not going to be satisfied if they come to Cleveland and don't exit with a national title. I mean, I think that's, you get to the Final Four, you get two wins from a title, you might as well win two more and take it. And again, not saying that because Iowa says they're not done that they're going to win. It's going to take two more incredible performances if that's going to happen, against UConn and then in all likelihood South Carolina. But I get the feeling that, the vibe, both when the buzzer went off and in the locker room after the game, it was both happy. It was obviously celebratory, but it didn't feel like that everybody just took a big breath and they had gotten to the finish line. It really didn't feel like that at all. Mm-hmm. And I'm not just saying that because it fits the narrative here, but I really feel like that, with Caitlin Clark leading the charge and everybody falling in line mentally right behind her where they're all in line, mm-hmm. I do think that they expect to come here and win two games. I think that that's a more than fair way to approach things. You know, I think coming here for a second year in a row, as much as distancing itself from last year was important to get this season to this point, I do think being in the Final Four last year and going through that experience is going to pay off this week, just because, you know, I remember hearing that their biggest shock last year in Dallas was just the amount of, you know, how extensive the itinerary was leading up to tip. And so I think Iowa is certainly in a better spot to handle that, know what's coming. They didn't go back to Iowa again, which is, you know, playing on Monday and then playing on Friday made that an easier decision than last year. But I do think going straight from Albany to Cleveland keeps everybody locked in. And, you know, these are the moments that this season was designed to get to. You know, these were the games that Iowa expected to be in and expected to play well in. And here they are in their minds just doing what, you know, they're supposed to be doing this year.
Yeah, and, you know, you're never going to get – you know, we know Caitlin Clark's moving on. You're never going to get – maybe never, but you may not ever get the greatest basketball player of all time on your team again.
Probably not.
So, you know, this is your chance, you know. If you're a Hawk fan out there, you're feeling it. You love this team, obviously. And, you know, never really been to the mountaintop other than wrestling. I mean, wrestling has kind of conquered it. You know, been there with, I mean, among the greatest teams of all time, obviously, you know, during the Dan Gable era across all college sports. But the big ones, football, basketball, like Iowa has really not. They've been close, like last year, women's basketball, but they've never pushed through to the top. And considering the, you know, the player that you have, the opportunity that you have, it is pretty, you know, it's something you want to capitalize on. It won't be a disappointing season if they lose to UConn on Friday night. However, this is a chance to, you know, end on top. And yep. It would be a national, international story. It's not like it's a, you know, there's a 3 and a 5 seed left on the other side and they're getting, you know,
no, they're going through the big guns.
They're going through everybody to get there. And let's start with the big guns here. UConn, everybody on Thursday when we get to Media Dargan is going to be focused on the Paige Beckers, Caitlin Clark story. And it is a compelling, great story. Two Midwest girls playing, you know, in Cleveland. You know, to get to the national championship game, you know, Beckers is from Minnesota, Caitlin from obviously West Des Moines, as we know, that, you know, that have an AAU relationship together, friends. You know, I don't think they're like still like best buddies or anything now, but obviously they have a history together. So, what do you make of kind of, and there are other layers to this too, because they've played each other before. UConn eliminated Iowa in Caitlin's first NCAA tournament in the Sweet 16. And I know you're – I don't want to tip your hand too much on this, so I'll let you kind of – to talk about it however much you want. But there are so much – so many compelling layers to the Clark, Beckers, Iowa, UConn storyline, in addition to the Wright Thompson story that talked about how UConn was her dream school and Gino's the one coach that never recruited her.
Yeah, and Gino actually got asked that yesterday on the Zoom.
Whoops. I took that personal.
Yeah, I think he basically said, I committed to Paige very early.
Yeah, and it makes sense.
And it would have been unfair to have Caitlin and Paige in the same, you know, competing for the same things at the elite level that they both operate at. So,
yeah, both top four national recruits.
Right, and I mean, if you go back and look at...
Tell us the top four. This is incredible.
So this is the top four of the 2020 women's basketball recruiting class. Caitlin was number four in that class, and the three players above her were Paige Beckers, Angel Reese, and Cameron Brink. So, I mean, that's arguably the four best players in women's basketball right now.
Right.
So,
yeah,
that's pretty incredible. But again, you know, like you said, there's a lot of overlap between Caitlin and Paige. But for me, what really kind of is the best perspective to look at this is to go back to that 2021 game in the Sweet 16 in San Antonio in the bubble after Iowa got a 5 seed, finished in the championship game of the Big Ten tournament, and played respectably. You know, I think it was about a 20-point loss in the end, but, you know, I think it just – to go back and read some of the comments that Caitlin Clark had after that game where, again – it would have been easy in that moment to say, hey, you know, we're building something, we're coming and all that. But to read those words and to look back at those words 3 years later, after playing Paige Beckers, and that was billed as a huge freshman matchup. And at that point, I would say Paige's stardom and hype and prestige in the sport was higher than Caitlin's, just being on UConn and being, in that elite discussion where Iowa wasn't quite yet at the time. And so to think about that matchup where Iowa was kind of the scrappy seed and UConn was the big one seed, and to have those roles in a way flipped a little bit. I know UConn, what's considered a down season at UConn is an elite season just about everywhere else. But, you know, you don't see UConn with a 3 seed in the NCAA tournament all that much. And the same way you don't see Iowa with a 1 seed very often in the NCAA tournament. So I think kind of using that game as a benchmark in history of how far things have come in the last 3 years with Caitlin Clark at the controls really gets emphasized in this weekend, where you have these stars coming back later in their careers and all that. And the other thing that I thought of last night that might get brought up again is obviously a big part of Paige Beckers' career and this year has been coming back from her injury and the amount of success that she's had coming off her torn ACL, which yeah. obviously cost her all of last season. To compare that with the fact that Caitlin Clark has never missed a game,
yeah.
and I'm not right. saying this is like, oh, Paige is injury prone or anything, but right. it just further emphasizes how crazy it's been that Caitlin has had no major injuries.
Right.
Has played in every game. There's not even been a time that I can remember where she would have been on the availability report.
No, yeah.
And I know I those agree. Have only existed for this year, but if they had been, I can't even recall a time where it was like, Caitlin might be questionable tonight. Or,
right.
I mean,
yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, she's had a couple
knocking on wood, everyone, yeah, just so you know.
Yes, correct. I mean, she's had some in-game bumps and bruises there, but nothing that has even remotely potentially kept her out of the lineup.
Yeah.
And so for that to get to this point in your career and not have any major injuries is pretty incredible.
Looking back at that box score, the date on that game was March 27th, 2021. Paige Beckers had 18 points. She was a true freshman, don't forget, back then. 9 rebounds, 8 assists in that ball game as a true freshman. UConn wins at 92-72. Caitlin Clark's stat line, the starting lineup, by the way, Dargan, in that game. McKenna Warnock, 20 points. Monica Sinano, 14 points. Kate Martin, 5 points on 2 of 9 shooting. Gabby Marshall hit 4 of 5 from 3 in that game.
I don't remember that. For
12 points. And then Caitlin Clark had 21 points, 3 rebounds, 5 assists, was 7 of 21 from the floor, a minus 24 rating. So, again, it gives you a sense of where this Iowa team has come from and the developmental stories that have emerged. Sharon Goodman played in that game 3.5 minutes as well. So a couple little threads to go back on. But another player in that game for UConn, Aaliyah Edwards, also a true freshman mm-hmm. in that game. She's also been a constant in this quote-unquote Iowa-UConn series, because Iowa did face UConn a year later.
In Portland.
In yep. Portland, and lost to them. Now, Paige did not play in that game, correct?
Correct, yep. She was out for...
Yeah. But Aaliyah Edwards is another element to this UConn team. 6'3" post, forward, I should say, that is going to give Iowa problems. But Iowa has, you know, got a little experience the other day with a really tough post like that with Angel Reese. So, curious to see how that all unfolds. I mean, the UConn angle is super intriguing. Iowa, were you going to say something?
Oh, no. I was just going to say it's crazy to look and see that UConn has not won a national title since 2016.
Is that right?
Wow. Yeah. They lost in the title game in 2022, but so I think the years after that was when that big, long winning streak ended. I think it was against Mississippi State, I believe, but – I mean, to think that it's almost been a decade since UConn has won a title is pretty absurd.
Yeah, it is. I think one of the narratives that we're going to hear is, UConn's got only seven players, and they are playing only seven. Most of the girls are going 40 minutes right now. But, you know, Iowa only went six deep against LSU. So it is that time of year where you're playing your best. But at the same time, these seven players for UConn are all like five-star. You know, I think there's four five-star recruits in their starting lineup. So, again, it's Iowa is favored by 2.5, Dargan, but it's going to be that same type of deal like the LSU matchup, right? It's going to be Caitlin and everyone else against, you know, the UConn – you know, roster, mm-hmm. you know, dynamics. But at the same time, I do want to give a nod to the development that Iowa players have had. I just listed some of those names. I mean, Kate Martin is so much more a different player now than she was then. You've got Sydney Folter, Hannah Stolke. Gabby's about the same, but great. I mean, mm-hmm. and does what she does. But and then, you know, Caitlin, obviously the pinnacle of that developmental story.
Yeah, and I mean, these are all, you know, all those names are pretty much all Midwest recruits. You know, I imagine their offer lists were not full of star-studded schools at the time. And so it's interesting that even within this season, you know, this has kind of been viewed as a quote-unquote down year for UConn. Just, you know, and they still sit here at 33-5. You know, the Big East, the difficulty of that league is certainly up for debate this year, but I think you've seen the last few games a UConn team that seems to know that no matter how much goes right or wrong up until late in March, that's where seasons get defined and that's where performances ultimately matter the most. And I think you saw that in their win over USC, which was a close game and had a lot of hype and stardom in that one as well. And so, yeah, I mean, it's really just, I think the even playing field of these two teams now does kind of emphasize how the women's game has evolved and changed since UConn was, you know, going undefeated almost every year, and you could have crowned them the national champion in August, which was the case in a lot of their most dominant seasons. And so for, you know, these schools to be on even playing field now wasn't something that I probably would have expected after that 2021 game. You know, I think we all saw that Caitlin Clark was going to be something special, but to have a team, like you said, full of people who didn't have a lot of recruiting hype, you know, weren't players that were expected to come in and be super dominant as freshmen, to take that team and take it up against UConn, which has all the prestige and history that it does, is yet another sign of just how much has changed with Caitlin Clark and Iowa women's basketball and everything, you know, involved in this one.
Coming up next, more Final Four preview chatter. We've got a few minutes left with me, Chad Lystico, and Dargan Southern next on Hawk Central 106.3 KXNO. Welcome back to Hawk Central Radio here on 106.3 KXNO. Chad Lystico of the Des Moines Register here. My voice always quickens in the last segment because we're running out of time. We only got about 6-7 minutes left. Joined by Dargan Southern here in Cleveland. We're talking Hawkeye women's hoops for the entire hour. We're going to have more preview coverage, so I want to point you guys to HawkCentral.com on Thursday afternoon and Friday morning, specifically about the matchup, what everyone's saying about it, the scouting reports, all that stuff. So make sure you tune in to all that stuff. We'll probably have like 10 or 12 videos up by then. So we're going to get a lot more detail on that front. But, Dargan, I wanted to finish our show tonight with, you know, kind of just the captivating audience that Iowa women's basketball has created. I mean, I was talking to Kate Martin's parents at the airport yesterday, and it's like they were talking to Jason Sudeikis for like 10 minutes, and like
normal now.
He loves the Martins, and like, you know, Caitlin's giving him a hug. I mean, we're talking like Ted Lasso's on the field. I mean, he's in the stands doing the, you know, you can't see me thing when Angel Reese fouls out. This is bizarre. It is so bizarre. I mean, who knows what kind of celebrities are going to show up this week? And it got me to thinking back to, I'm doing a story for Friday's 1A Register, and it's going to be awesome because I can't believe the amount of responses I've gotten from my text group. It's like very emotional. All right. So like, it's just, it's going to talk about, you know, why this team has become so special to so many Iowans and maybe not, I mean, across the country. I mean, it's clearly become a national thing at this point, as you can see by the viewership. But where did it – did anything ever shift for you? I wanted to kind of – like, I did not cover much women's basketball in this role. I became the columnist for the Hawkeyes pretty much after the 15 football season. I covered – I was on the beat for Iowa football in the 15 season. Rick Brown was the columnist. He retired. I became the columnist after that. I did not do much women's basketball for probably 3 years.
Yeah.
The 2019 season for me is when I – started doing more women's basketball because Megan Gustafson was becoming a major story that year. And I remember doing some pieces. I remember sitting down with Tania Davis, Hannah Stewart, and Megan Gustafson on the floor of the practice gym for a senior day story. Mm-hmm. And they were just – they just captivated me just with just how funny they were, how pleasant they were. Like Megan was like the goofiest person like ever. And they all like made fun of her and stuff like that. And like, she kind of made fun of herself. And it's just like, this team was so likable. And then it went to the Big Ten tournament and they won it. And it was just like, and then they started selling most of the seats in the arena for the tournament. They got to the Elite Eight. Megan Gust was some national player of the year. And then Kathleen Doyle was like a different kind of star, but like hilarious and like captivating. And for me, that's when it started in terms of my professional career. And there's so many stories out there. I'm just kind of curious, you know, when did you kind of see your person? You've covered the team now, what, 7 years?
Yeah, so my first year was Megan Gustafson's junior year. Our former colleague Matthew Bain covered the first year that we got hired together. And so he covered the first year, which was Allie Disterhoff, senior year, going to the WNIT. And so I always like to joke with him that the success started when he got off the beat and I joined the beat. So, and I remember that first year, you know, the big goal was getting back to the NCAA tournament. And they did that out in Los Angeles against Creighton.
That's right, yeah.
And that kind of set the stage for the following year, which was Megan Gustafson's senior year, a strong senior class. That team started pretty high in the polls. And there was some hardcore expectations that season that were largely met. And you know, the quote that always sticks with me is from Monica Sanano. I believe she said it last year, was when they lost to Baylor in the Elite Eight, Megan Gustafson's senior year, she sat there and was like, yeah, I guess this is the ceiling for Iowa women's basketball. And it would have been easy to feel that way because they lost by 30 points to the eventual national champ. And so, you know, I think as great as things got under Megan, and that was 100% the foundation, because I firmly believe that if Megan Gustafson doesn't have Iowa women's basketball where it does, Caitlin Clark does not go to Iowa. I mean, I don't.
That's a great point.
I don't know if she's officially said that on the record, but I think I think that's.
Well, she committed the next
right.
The next offseason.
Right. So. And so, and again, another big thing, you know, I know that transition year in between Gustafson and Clark, a large part because the NCAA tournament didn't happen that year. But that was a huge transition year because that was a year that had no expectations. Everybody expected the program to drop off after Megan left. And that team, had there been a tournament, would have hosted. You know, they would have been three or four seed somewhere in there.
Yeah, and Doyle was player of the year in the Big Ten.
So I felt like that was the perfect transition year into the Clark years. And so, but even within the Clark years, they've kind of been their own story. I mean, I remember, you know, I tell people all the time that all the hype that had been established going into last year's NCAA tournament was there going into the NCAA tournament the year before when they lost to Creighton. And so, you know, that was kind of a crossroads of, you know, halfway through Caitlin Clark's career, you know, that she had elevated their profile but didn't have any high-end winning yet to go with it. And so then obviously the last 2 years have happened and completely erased that. So I think even though Caitlin has taken it to another level in her time here, I think it's been a gradual progression up to this point.
Oh man, I wish we could like talk about this topic another 15 minutes. So we have to put a pin in it because we're running out of time here. We're up against the 7 o'clock finish line. Thanks, Dargan. We'll have you guys covered from Cleveland.
Appreciate it.
Thanks,
Chad.
Buddy. Iowa UConn Friday night. This will be the end of the Caitlin Clark experience at Iowa. Either one game or two games. Hate to break it to you, but this is it. So enjoy. We got you covered at Hawk Central. Thanks for joining us here on Hawk Central, 106.3 KXNO. I'm Chad Lysico for Dargan Southern. Saying so long and good night.
just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.